Today is the 12th of July 2018. I'm interviewing Valerie Yule and Lawrence Yule about their family in Hawke's Bay. Valerie, would you like to tell us something about your family, please?
Yes. Well, my grandfather was Charles Yule.
Charles Rosser,
and my grandmother was Esther. And they had three children. They had my father, which was Claude, Clarice, and Ivy. And Granddad bought some land at Pakipak. My father was farming at Dannyburg Way, and he sold his farm because Granddad couldn't cope. And so we came down to Pakipak, and we both lived on the farm, my grandfather and grandmother and us. I went to school at Pakipak School, and the bus used to come from Bridgepower to Pakipak, and it was mostly Maori, but they were lovely families that lived there. And then when I went to secondary school, I went to Girls and Boys High School, but that wasn't the best because Bridgepower children came to Pakipak too. But the bus had to go to Bridgepower and Pakipak, so we got in late to the boys' high, and we left early, and we never could have any sport. That was one thing. And anyway, Dad started off milking cows, and he did that for quite a few years, and then he gave it up, and Granddad died, and he bought the rest of the farm. And then he did cropping, like making hay and that sort of thing, and cropping. I've been on a threshing machine, and that was lovely because it was so dusty, and you have to sew the bags by hand, and then often you put the needle in the bag, and then you'd have to run down and get it. And that was what he did to begin with, and then he gave it away, and he did cropping really more. He was the first one that did irrigation.
Yes, the border diving.
Yes.
Well, he was a pioneer in Hawke's Bay. I don't think anyone else at that stage was border diving.
No, no. And he did one. He put a well down himself, you know. But no, it was a good life, but it was fairly busy.
Just where was the farm at Pakipak?
It was down Rosser Road.
I remember seeing the dikes, the border dikes, on the paddocks for many years.
Yes, but Rosser Road, there were only three of us. There was two, actually, McLeod's and us. And then someone owned some land further. You went over the creek and a little bridge, and that was as far as the road.
Right.
It was a good life. We worked hard. But
would you have backed on to Eagledon's?
Yes, it was Gardeners then, and the creek was between us. And we could cross over the creek if we wanted to.
It's interesting. We were all suppliers of the Heratonga Dairy Company.
Yes.
All dairy farmers, pretty well on the plains. Yes.
And if you wanted butter, you put out stones and
a cream can.
Yes, and they would give you butter.
Yes, there was no fridge on the truck, just wooden box and the butter sitting in there.
And when the inspectors came, you know, to milk.
Check the cows.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. And see what you know, how much you produced. And you had to start the cows off and finish them. And I have been there, and if you happen to start it off and bang the bucket, oh dear, because the cows wouldn't get away as much. You were not very popular.
Sensitive area.
Very, very.
So you went to school from...
We walked to the end of the road.
And that's where the bus picked you up.
Yes, and there were pine trees then, all on that corner.
So you went to school at our mixed high school for how long?
I went, got school certificate, that's as far as I went.
And from there you went to work?
Yes, I worked in the ANZ Bank. I biked from home, I always had a headwind every way. Then I was a junior for 2 years, so I had to bike round all the different firms to pick up. And it was nothing for us to, I had a friend, Beth Coleman, her father worked on the railway, Pakipak. And we would bike into town, you know, on a Saturday. And then Dad bought me a small car, which was wonderful, really.
Can you remember what sort of car it was?
A little Morris Minor. Yes, so that was lovely. So no, we did very well.
So you continued working at the bank. Obviously you progressed from riding around the agencies.
I worked there, well, it was a good few years, actually. I'm not sure how long. But I began to feel I was part of the furniture, so I left and went over to, I had a friend in Melbourne, and I went over and saw her and had a bit of a trip round. And I came back, and the bank wanted me back, but Von Marsh advertised for someone. So I went and had an interview, and they went over to the bank, and the bank said, well, we want her back. If you won't come back to us, you know, she's very good. And they were wonderful to work for. I was in the office, and I worked there till I got married, and they were wonderful people to work for.
Yes.
Actually, I go to up at the library often on that Tuesday, and I actually went and heard them speak.
So, obviously, at some stage you met this young Donald Yule.
That was from church, St.
From
Andrew's. I was a Sunday school teacher there, and he was, you know, an elder. And then he went to St. David's, and that started up. But no, that's where we met, and it just went on from there.
See, I always thought Donald came from the Eastvale area.
He worked there. He worked there for his cousin,
right.
Brian Yule.
The Yules, there were two brothers. So Ralph, that was Dad's father, their homestead's in Frederick Street. So there's the big home in Frederick Street. And they were children, all surrounded by paddocks.
Yes.
And milk cows. And then they also had a they had a lot of property in the Warrapa. They actually went through some hard times and lost a lot of that. And then Ralph had property out at Ormond Road, which is where Douglas was dairy farm there. And then Rob, Ralph's brother, had the property at Eastdale. And I don't know whether they actually ran them financially together, but they sort of worked them together. And
sure.
Dad spent a lot of time at Rob's at Eastdale. And he played rugby in Napier for Boris.
That's
yes.
So, obviously, at some stage, he bought the farm at Otamari.
Well, that was really helped very much by my father.
Right. And Morden was Donald's
brother.
Yes, the next one.
So it's fair to say, I think, that the wives of both Gordon and Donald actually helped them into the land.
They did.
Mum's father helped Otamari, and Gordon's farm was a butt farm, which was good.
Right.
That's really how that happened in those two cases.
And you say butt?
Butt, yeah.
In relation
butt.
Mary Butt?
Oh, I don't know that name.
No. Were the children born when you went to Otamari?
No, I had them when I was at Campbell's.
I was.
Yes.
So when Mum and Dad first got married, Dad was a shepherd at Awanui Station. It was the Campbell property.
Yes.
Okay, so they got married there. I was born there.
Mm-hmm.
And then shortly after that, they had the opportunity to purchase this piece of land.
Laurie Lowe's.
So I was the only one that wasn't born.
Really, about 2 years, because it's about 2 years between
yes.
them.
So then you were living at Otamari, where you built the homestead.
No, we didn't build the homestead.
Effectively, the first property that was purchased at Otamari was about 400 acres at the time. It had a small, modest house on it, which is where we all grew up.
Yes, that was on the left.
As you're going up Otamari Road on the left.
Yes.
That's right.
And when I was about 14, somewhere around then, the next door neighbour's property came up, because when Laurie Lowe actually got out of farming, he sold the first bit to Mum and Dad, and then he sold the second bit to Bill and Margaret Gilbert. They decided to leave farming, and then Mum and Dad managed to purchase the second bit, so
right.
we put the farm effectively back together again. So we actually had two houses, so we never built a house.
That was the homestead.
The homestead
was
on the second block.
Where
yes.
Laurie Lowe had it.
And so that would have been...
I was born in 63, so it would have been 70... It would have been the early 80s.
Sure. I haven't met your brother.
Andrew. He's very similar to me. He's a bit thinner and he's got black hair. But we do look quite similar.
Mm.
And is he local?
No, he's down south.
Oh.
In Invercargill.
He works for...
PGG Rights.
He did have land, but he sold it and went down.
Oh,
it can be quite cold.
Take my hat off people who live in that area.
He likes it though.
Yeah.
So then Donald obviously became active in farm politics and local body politics.
Not really local
no,
body
no,
politics.
No, it was more.
So
and wasn't that, was it different to what it is now, wasn't it?
It was the Hawke's Bailey.
Yes, that's
right. He had 20 branches, and he would have been the chairman of the
But just in the meantime, so we had, I mean, there's myself, my brother Andrew, and my sister Jeanette, all brought up here, and we all went to Crown Port Primary School. Mum and Dad were huge supporters of that school and that community.
Oh, it was a wonderful community. Yeah. We had golf. We played.
We all looked after each other.
You never went to town unless you asked your neighbours if they want anything. We car shed, and we had also, we'd have flower shows and plays, and we had institute.
Well, you made your own fund.
Oh, it's changed completely. It was a wonderful district to be living in.
People that lived up there, very proud of that place.
Oh, yeah.
Who used to live there and what they used to do.
It was, like, I look back on it and it was quite, when you think about it now, it's quite amazing. Because we had one car and we'd usually go to town on a Friday. And the school would, it would close half an hour early on a Friday. So all the pupils and their parents, so they all rock up and go to town and you do the shop for the week. And I remember Dad and other parents were sort of similar, did similar things. But Dad used to coach rugby because, you know, he played for Auckland. Used to coach rugby. And if the car wasn't available, Mum wasn't there. The only other vehicle we had on the farm was a 24 Fergie tractor. So he would drive the tractor from the farm down to teach us rugby. And if you think about how slow they were compared to Fergie, but that's what we did. There's no other way of getting there. So the tractor would be parked outside, he'd take some rugby, and then off we'd go again. So, you know, when I think about Barry Gibson, he used to just mow the grounds. He'd come down with a big, you know, a machine as a silage, and he'd just mow them and take them. That's what he'd do. And they'd put all the silage under a tree, all the grass, and we'd make huts as kids. You know, like, probably wouldn't be allowed to now.
No, but it was very good. But the trouble was, one thing living out there, both parents lived, Dad and Mum lived at Pucky Park, and Nana lived at Hastings. So we'd go and see Nana, and then we'd go out to Mum and Dad, and the children slept in the car coming home, you know what I mean? So
we'd sort of leave, we'd leave school at 2:30. We'd go and do grocery shopping and all the stuff we needed to do. Then we'd pop in and see Nana at Frederick Street, and then we'd go out and have fish and chips at Grandma's. That's pretty much how we did every time. By the time we got home, it's like 9 o'clock at night.
We had to take children out of sleep in the car.
But, you know, it was a wonderful, each community had some wonderful stories about, you know, rural groups, but they're dispersed to people.
And especially out there,
the
corporate farming that's moved in there. If you look at all the grapes, most of them owned by one or two big companies, you know. That's sort of what's happening. And their labour is all Filipino employees or something. It's very different. But I remember, you know, wonderful families like the Connors, the Gibsons, the Treasurers, who were really good friends of Mum and Dad's and helped bring us up.
And of course, it had its golf club.
Yes.
It had its hall. It had its church. It was a full community. It just happened to be there.
See, the church is hardly used now.
The school was the biggest school. So when I went to school there, it had 72 pupils. So it was by far the biggest school. It's now closed.
Actually, I think we've got all the records of the school that have been digitalised. Just hope somewhere we can find someone to talk to about the school.
So I was teacher's aide there.
Really? So you went off to high school. Was there a bus?
No, there wasn't.
No,
so
they had to board.
We went to Rathkeel. Andrew and I both went to Rathkeel, and
Jeanette
went to Iona.
Where's Rathkeel?
It's in Masterton. And at that time, it was too far for us to, there was no bus. Well, there was a bus at Pukeomomo, but that sort of came later. And Lindisfarne was another boarding school. They didn't have a very good name at the time. So at that time, when I went, there was 100 boys from Hastings would go to Rathkeel every 3 weeks. Three buses would turn up here from Masterton and take us. When you think about it,
that's amazing.
But that's what we did. So we went to a school which was considered good at the time, and it was. You know,
yes.
I mean, I've got my theories about it, but that's what we did. And there's a lot of well-known families that did the same.
We were very lucky. The motel we stayed in, they would let us have it on a Sunday, wouldn't they? Until we left.
So did you play sport?
Yeah. I played, well, we both played rugby. Andrew was a way better rugby player than I was, and he actually got in the Ross Shield team when he was at Crownford. I was average rugby player. You know, encouraged by Dad, but I never quite had the natural ability.
Yeah.
And
Jeanette.
So we were, my mum and dad were really good at encouraging us to do, you know, to us music.
Horse sports did you have?
No.
And I wasn't a horse person. I did have a horse. Mind you, horses weren't good on Puggy Park Farm.
Mm.
They got lockjawed. Mm. There was something there.
Lack of iodine.
Is that what it was?
Yes.
Well, I had a horse, and I really was quite frightened of it. And it would get too fat, and Dad would put it in
a stack.
Yes, and then I'd go out, and I'd go, oh dear, no, it was not my thing at all.
We're talking about going down to take part in the AMP show, and I said, well, those days, but how did you take your horse?
He rode it.
Yeah. And I said, you're joking. I said, the horse would be worn out. Well, he said, they were fit. The horses, let's see, we take these things for granted.
No. And so, Dad had a horse that he'd brought from, was it called Judy? Was the name of the horse? Bought from Awanui, but he never used it.
Yes.
And then it disappeared. We think it must have gone over a block.
I think it must have gone over.
We never found it. You know, just disappeared.
I think that must have been what happened.
Yeah, so we never had a horse. And then Judith Yule, Gordon's wife, she was really into her horses. So their daughter, Catherine, is very similar age to Jeanette.
Yes.
So Jeanette sort of started to get quite keen on horses. So we ended up with a horse.
But it wasn't it.
It was
had trouble with its feet. And Jeanette was very much, you hate having her on a lambing beat because anything that looked as though it was mothered, it came home.
Yeah.
And she had one there. And it died, and Donald threw up. We had a gorge, threw it over a gorge. Well, after that, there was a special paddock that had to be buried, and they always had to be ewe lambs till they died. Anyway, with a horse, it wasn't, we'd had it reshoed, hadn't we? All sorts of things, and it wasn't good. And she was in Wellington, I think. Anyway, it did die. She said, now if it dies, it's to be buried properly, with its feet not sticking out. So anyway, it did die. And luckily there was a front end loader in the district, so that came and buried
it. All done properly.
Well, she came home and she went up, and there was a bit of, wasn't there?
It was sunk.
Was it sunk or something? Oh dear. Did she go to town?
Yeah.
You didn't cut it in half, did you?
No, it was all done properly. But she loves animals, and it's always a difficult thing on farms.
So then from Rathkeel, did you go to Lincoln?
I went to Canterbury. I went to Canterbury for 3 years and Lincoln for 1 year. So I've got an agricultural engineering degree, and I specialised in irrigation. I did quite well. I ended up with honours in that. So that was mine. And then Andrew and Jeanette both went to Massey. Andrew's got an agricultural commerce degree. What's Jeanette got? A Bachelor of Business Studies, I think.
Yes.
You're the most, probably one of the most qualified people on irrigation and drainage. And you have never, ever promoted yourself. You've kept that knowledge and used it in a, probably a much more wise way.
Well, Mum will tell you, I always loved making and building things. And we used to have, outside our house, there was a culvert that came under the road. And I made a little dam and put pipes in them.
Yes.
It's been like hours and hours. So I was always interested. Maybe it was my grandfather, the sort of, because he pulled was very good and he liked water. And I do today. So by the time I'd finished engineering, I found it a bit, it wasn't really, I did well at it, but I found it a bit boring. And then I got a job at the North Canterbury Catchment Board, which is now called ECAM. And I was measuring wells and monitoring water use. Generally, the farmers hated you because they just wanted you to go away. They had water in the ground, they used it however they liked. But now we know, in today's world, that actually it's only a limited resource and the more efficiently it's managed, the better. But in those days, it's mine, I'm using it, go away. And then Dad actually, well, I came home, didn't I, because I didn't really, wasn't enjoying it, I was looking for other things. And Mum and Dad were getting a bit older and we thought we'd help out. And they were very good about letting us come home. And then, fortunately, Dad died and that, you know,
Andrew was home first,
yeah.
Wasn't he?
Yeah, so we were both there, and then while we were both there, we bought another farm. So,
yes.
You know, Mum and Dad did pretty well, because they started off in a small block, and we managed to buy the big block, and then we had enough equity to buy another farm for Andrew, which we did. And then, unfortunately, not long after that, Dad had a brain aneurysm. So they're, you know, wonderful parents, and very hardworking.
And then there was another period of your life where you met Anthea.
Yeah, that was while we were farming, I'd met Anthea while I was at university.
Yes.
And then she came up, and by that stage we had the two farms put together. So Mum and Dad were living in the homestead, and Anthea and I moved into our original house, which was a smaller place.
Yes.
Set it up a bit inside and started our family.
But it was very fortunate for me because Donald died in the July and Emma was born in the November.
Yes.
So those four children were mine.
I'll never forget it to this day. There was two things happened one day. Anthea and I decided we would plant three oak trees out the front of this cottage. Dad just, he came up, he just couldn't understand what we were doing. He just, what are you doing that for? He just, you know, like, he wasn't a big tree man. He just, and these were oak trees we put drums. We're all very proud of them as a...
Yes.
And then we told him that he was going to be a grandfather. Well, even that, he just couldn't get his head around the fact that there was another child coming and how that had happened. And, like, it took him a little bit to get his head around that. But then he was great. And one of the, I suppose, sadnesses of my life is that, well, apart from losing Dad so young, was he never saw Emma. So he never...
No, he didn't.
Yeah. But having Emma born was a great lift for Mum after Dad.
And then they were my life, actually.
So we had four children, or we had four children. Emma, Thomas, Henry and Charles, all born about 2 years apart. And they have done and still do incredibly well. They started off at Crownthorpe School. That had a few hiccups, so we shifted them to Sheringham School. And when I became the mayor, actually for the last couple of years, I took Charles into Frimley. The others are off at Lindisfarne and Iona. But we had a great life. You know, it was great having Mum out there. It was incredibly sad, you know, when Dad died. And then we swapped houses. So we moved into the homestead with and Mum moved back.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was...
I remember it was quite traumatic because he was a fit man.
Well, I always think to this day, while at the time, you know, you step up and do the thing that you have to do, and a horrendous loss for Mum, it did put us in probably a period of responsibility ahead of our years when I look back at it, you know.
And you wouldn't want him back. I had a friend that taught Sunday school at St Andrews, and her sister had the same thing. And she said, I prayed and prayed that she'd be saved. And she was. She said, Valerie, all she could do was go, You know,
terrible.
So you wouldn't wish it, because they had someone,
a young woman that
with their children,
and
they operated and that happened, so they wouldn't do anything for them.
So then, children were all at Crownthorpe and one...
Yeah, no, the children were at Crownthorpe till, and then we went to Sheringham for the last part of their education. Then they went off to boarding school. And when Emma, Thomas and Henry were at boarding school, Charles was there and left, so I used to bring them into Frimley.
I remember meeting them at one of your, oh, it must have been your victory night. They're all big people.
Yeah,
they're no longer kids.
No.
I'm a squirt, actually. You know, I'm well below the elders.
And what do they do?
So Emma is a lawyer across the road. She's at Sooner Stones. He's an associate across the road here. Thomas has been the chief executive of Farmers Transport, but he stood down from that position and he's looking to set up his own business. Henry is a vet in Pukekohe, and Charles is on the farm with Anthea. So one of the sad things that happened is Anthea and I, our marriage split up. So that would be about 10 years ago. Would it be?
It would be.
About 1997. I've since remarried Kieran Jones, and we're very happy, but Anthea's out on the farm, so we restructured the marriage settlement effectively to allow the farm to be kept, and so Anthea's out there on the farm. I've moved into town, I live in Napier now. I've gone on with my political life, my new life. The children basically have the property. As difficult as these things are, we're actually quite pragmatic about the property issues, because ultimately you either sell the whole thing or you, and obviously the children's anyways.
But as it is now, everything's workable.
Yeah,
it's all
workable.
Everyone's going their own direction.
That's right.
And you're able to salvage
something. That's right. Yeah. And Mum's been, she's been always rock solid on all sides. It's been difficult, but Mum moved from the country. How long ago?
I'm just trying to think. It's over 10 years,
well,
I
over
should 10 think.
Years. About 15 years, I think.
Yes, I'd never lived in town, but I had this Mum's sister, and she died when she was 90. Now, there's only two girl cousins. Mum was one of seven, but there's only Eileen and myself who has now died. But I used to come in, because I played bridge, and I'd come in and stay the night, play my bridge, and then I'd do her shopping or anything else. Eileen would take her to the doctor and
right.
that. And it was very good after she died. People said, oh, come and stay, but it wasn't the same. And it's the best thing I did, to be quite honest. I'd never lived in town, but you have to join things. I've joined quite a few things, you know.
So now your new life, of course, started out back with the National Party and Michael Laws.
Yes, Michael Laws, yes.
Well, no, I don't. Contact me once on Facebook. I mean, my National Party years were formed from Dad's absolute love of the party and his complete interest.
Yes.
So he was mad on it. It was like he would watch every piece of news and spend hours on the phone, just about more on the phone when he was involved in that, I think, than probably other farming business. When it was really on, he was just absolutely passionate. So that's where my interest started.
Yes. Well, you inherited Michael, but because Donald, when he was still with us, said to me, now, don't you let that boy of mine get involved in politics too early. He's too young.
And so I got involved, you know, when Michael first came up. I ended up being the electorate chair after you for a short period of time. That was a very challenging time. One, I was young. Two, I had a very challenging candidate. You know, everybody did, but I mean,
I remember because Donald and I, we invited him to come down to the Auckland.
You met him or saw him.
Yeah. And when he came down, he said, oh my God, he said, we've got a tiger by the tail here. True words
true,
have never
yeah,
spoken.
Yeah.
So then you progressed on and became the mayor.
Yeah, I got asked actually at the time, and Michael and I discussed it, whether I would stand as a member of parliament after his first term. But I just couldn't do it. I was too young. I had a young family. So I said no. And then, effectively, I got involved in about 1990 in what was called the Rural Revolt at the time,
that's
which
right.
was where
yes.
the amalgamation of Hastings, the county, and Hemlock North formed. And the rural people got completely nailed because the urban people said the rural people should pay the debt of the city. The debt of the city is $40 million. The rural people had debt of $2 million. We were somehow having to pay theirs.
Mm-hmm.
And that was never going to happen. So I joined the Rural Revolt as part of the campaign team, got quite interested in that. We actually, even it's bizarre when I think about it, but we went to Napier City and asked to join. The rural area of Hastings asked to join Napier City because I remember going and meeting us. When I think back of it, it was bizarre. Anyway, that action forced some changes. Jeremy Royer and co took on board those changes, brought in a new chief executive, and the Rural Community Board was formed, and that's then been settled. But that was really my interest in local government. Then I was asked to stand for the Carwick Award because Ralph Beamish was retiring as a member.
Yes.
And I had a go at that, one. And then I was made the deputy mayor 3 years later. And then Jeremy Dwyer stood down and it was suggested that I stand for the mayoralty, and I did, and I won.
Well, who was when Ralph?
Robert Anderson stood against me. Was it not?
Well, I'm not sure who it was because I went with Helen Arthur. I used to look after her at church. Ralph Beamish was there and said to her, I can't think who it was, vote for him. Excuse me, I'm voting for this.
Well, there was
really
so the issue down. There was that Robert Anderson was on the Rural Community Board. He might
that's
have been
right.
the chairman. So there was an heir apparent type of thing that was
yes,
going to happen.
That's right.
So then I became the mayor. And then, interestingly enough, just after that, National was looking for a candidate as well at around the time Craig Foss started. And I was asked again to stand for parliament. And I said no. I've just been voted in as the leader. I'm starting a career in local government, and I turned it down then. So I stayed on and became the mayor of Hastings, and was that for 15 years.
You also were the chairman of
Local Government New Zealand,
which you know it's pretty important.
It was. I mean, that was 9 years. So
that's
after
right.
6 years in the mayor, I was asked to do that. I'm the longest serving. They actually changed the constitution to allow me to carry on Local Government New Zealand. So I had 9 years of doing that. And then I also chaired the Commonwealth Local Government Forum, which is the body of Commonwealth countries
yes.
and the body of local
yes.
government in all
yes.
those countries for 6 years, which was it was a wonderful opportunity. I've travelled all around the world and realised how good New Zealand is and actually how good our governance structures are and our systems are here. So I've had a lot of experience in local government. And then, unexpectedly, Craig Foss decided that he wouldn't stand again after I'd just been elected.
Yes,
as the mayor again.
Yeah.
So I pretty much had to weigh up what more I could do in local government, and probably not a lot. I'd pretty much achieved just about every role I could. And this was the third time I'd been asked to stand for parliament. If I didn't stand now, that'd be it. So I thought the usual things, well, the people have just voted me as the mayor, what would they think about that? There'd be a by-election, there'd be costs associated with that. So I knew of all those difficulties, but in the end, Kieran and I decided that actually this is a one-off opportunity. Mm. You'll never get another chance. Mm. So have a go, and I did. In the middle of that, of course, I've had the Havelock North Water crisis, which was probably one of the biggest things I've ever dealt with in my life in a public issue. And I did think that could actually cause me quite some difficulty in the election campaign. But fortunately, I got through all that. And I'm not hiding from it because it's the worst water contamination in the last 100 years in the world. So pretty big.
Our farm and relatives' farms have straddled the whole system, and you probably as much or more about it than a lot of the experts did.
Yeah. Well, even when I look back at how that was done, where those bores were located, was a pragmatic decision that was made by the mayor after driving down the road, looking at the Vale Road, saying, well, it's wet here, here's a place where we could put us by a power supply.
That was convenient.
That's convenient. That's how it was done.
We had 37 years of beautiful, clear, unfluoridated water. We always forget that, but yeah, the media got hold of that.
It was just, we sort of forget how those decisions were made. That decision was made because Hastings and Havelock could not reach agreement on doing a shared thing. So in the end, Havelock said, don't care, we're doing our own thing, that's where it's going to be.
And that's all they could afford it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, so you've had a really good look at the local body politics from all angles, haven't you?
Well, I do have a lot of knowledge. So going into Parliament, it is interesting. I thought I'd done pretty well becoming a Member of Parliament because there's less Members of Parliament than there are All Blacks. That's interesting over time. I didn't know that, but there are. So I thought, well, that's pretty good. But when I got there, I found out I was by far, or significantly, the oldest and our intake national MPs. You know,
right?
I've got MPs that are 27. And I'm thinking, oh, so they started off calling me Dad, but I said I'd prefer to be called Uncle. But what I'm learning is I do have some experience that a lot of people don't have, and they're constantly asking me, what do you think about this? Have you seen this before? Yes. So, no, I'm really enjoying what I'm doing. Mm. It's different.
Now, Kieran, where is Kieran from?
So she is a Jones, she's a Napier Jones. So her family is Jones Transport, so that's her heritage. And her mother is a Nicholson, and they were into funeral directing in Napier. And so they own a transport company today, and still driving around as part of Hawke's Bay's heritage. And
one of the few left in Napier.
Yeah, it is one of the few left. Very successful business, still is today. And so Kieran, she's the youngest of four, and yeah, so I met her about 10 years ago. Yes, she's a staunch Napier girl and very proud of it. Yeah, that's her background.
Now, coming back, your children old enough to have children?
We're just about to. Emma,
so
Emma's just
be
about
your
to have
first grandchild.
Great grandchild. First, my grandchild, they can call me granddad.
Yeah.
That's what my parliamentary colleagues will call me. Yeah, so after Christmas, yeah, we're expecting. Yeah.
It's amazing just, you know, how much you've crammed into your life. There's been no spare time, has there?
Well, Mum and Dad both worked hard. We never wanted for anything, and they were always loving and caring, but they worked hard. And it has instilled in us a work ethic that I think we've all got. And then Anthea is an incredibly hard worker as well. So our children, they're pretty driven and work pretty hard. Sometimes I worry they overdo it a bit. But so you'd never, like, they've done incredibly well, but they're not afraid of hard work.
Was Anthea a farmer's daughter?
Yes.
So that's where the love of farming.
Yeah. So she was a great mum, passionate, caring for the kids, a hard worker. So that's been instilled. And I'm like that. And, you know, Kieran's been quite good for me to say, well, slow down a bit. I don't know what's listening for.
Well, you consider.
Yeah.
So is there anything else you can think of? In fact, it's quite interesting how much we've covered because you haven't wasted any words. So I think at this stage I would like to say thank you for the contribution that you've made, Lawrence, to our community, and Valerie for you being his mother.
I mean Mum's been a wonderful mum.
But Donald was like that too.
You know, he was.
Donald and I used to talk quite a lot about politics, and he'd quite often make the bullets and I would fire them because, you know, he was quite political.
He was good, but
he was
a very shy person. And I'd go to these meetings and I'd be sitting there and he'd...
Dad was also gentle. He didn't really like, you know, so he'd make them and he'd get you to fire them sometimes because that just wasn't in his nature. He didn't You know, he's firm, he had a view about things, but he didn't like all up scraps. And I don't either, actually. It's interesting, my appearance, I don't particularly like confrontation, and I'm not particularly good at it. I'd rather, I mean, I can be firm on things, what I won't be moved on, but, and I think, you know, some people quite like confrontation, but I don't particularly.
Quite often it doesn't achieve much.
No, and I've learned that over my years in politics, that the more consensus you can bring, and try and bring people with you, the more likely you are to succeed.
I've said this to you before, Lawrence, you answer the questions before they're asked.
That's right. That's exactly the best advice.
So, once again, thank you for the opportunity to...
I'm sorry I've put, you know, pressure on you.
No,
I think it's about time anyway.
No, you haven't.
Oh, that's all right.
Well, I think we should thank you, Frank. I mean, also, because you spend hours doing this.
Mm.
It's just a nice thing to do, and it's wonderful, because without you coming around here, this wouldn't be recorded.
No.
But it's important to say, you know, who are these families?